Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Friday, February 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. On today's show, we'll find out about this week's Sound in Motion presentation highlighting treasures from the State Film Library with guest Damon Stubner, astronomer Dennis Mamana will be here to discuss the Seven Wonders of the Universe. Andrew Krupe from the Department of Fish and Game will be on the show with a preview of his Friday fireside lecture at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center about Chilkoot River brown bears. We'll find out more about the upcoming AEYC Early Childhood Conference, and we'll talk with visiting instructor Sarah Joy Marsh about her weekend yoga classes.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Recently, two bills that would simplify the process for Native Americans in Arizona seeking delayed birth certificates passed key committees in the state legislature. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, the bills seek to ease hardships encountered by tribal members.
Many Native Americans born in rural parts of Arizona before 1970 were never issued birth certificates, and obtaining one later in life has often been a years-long costly process. Getting a driver's license, receiving Social Security and retirement benefits, and voting are all dependent on having a birth certificate. The House and Senate bills would reduce the number of documents needed and allow the state registrar to work on a case-by-case basis with applicants. Since 2009, District 5 Coconino County Supervisor Lena Fowler has been an advocate for reforming the process.
It really does create a lot of hardship in the daily lives of these people, struggles, and just a lot of confusion. Well, I am just so happy. People's quality of life is going to improve. They're going to be able to exercise their full rights.
Fowler testified before the House Government and Higher Education Committee, which unanimously passed the bill. The legislation will now go to the full House and Senate for consideration before heading to the governor for his signature. Last fall, the state health department temporarily streamlined the process, but the bills would make those changes permanent. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The traditional art of gut sewing, or sewing with dried seal intestines, is being taught in Alaska. Seal intestines were prized throughout Yupik history for their waterproof performance before modern materials took hold. A culture bearer is working to pass on the skill, as KYUK's Charles Enoch reports.
For most students, today is the first time they have ever worked with guts. Their 71-year-old instructor, however, Mary Dunuchuk, has a lifetime of experience with the traditional material. She says imaginitit, or gut parkas, were critical for survival in her youth.
The waterproof gut parkas were very important for men while hunting in the ocean. The way it reacts to moisture makes it a more effective insulated raincoat than most modern raincoats. In my first memories, women would learn to make raincoats and other waterproof items before they get married, to ensure a better chance at survival. These days, I never see anyone practice the art anymore.
Revitalizing the practice is part of the goal of the workshop, hosted by Bethel's Yupit Pichirirait Cultural Center and sponsored by the Smithsonian Arctic Studies Center and the Anchorage Museum. Besides parkas, seal intestines were used to make all kinds of waterproof items like bags, mittens, boot linings, and even windows. Curator Sarah Owens explains students will be using two kinds of material.
There's going to be a mixture of native students who will be using seal intestine that Mary's providing, but there's also going to be non-native students like myself, and we will be using a substitute. We'll be using hog intestine to sew with, because it's actually illegal for us to be sewing the seal intestine.
Tunuchuk explains the process starts with the raw seal intestines, which are washed. She uses a dull scraper to remove the soft, fleshy material from a membrane, which is later painstakingly cleaned of any flesh or blood. It's washed in brine or fresh water before being inflated like a long balloon and hung to dry. Students end up having made an amber-colored translucent window. In ancient times, the window would have served as more of a skylight, called tanqin, Yupik for something that brightens. The seal intestines for the class were provided by Mary Dunuchuk, who processed the intestine from seals caught by her kids and grandkids. In Bethel, I'm Charles Enoch.
Tribes in 34 states have been awarded Indian Housing Block grants, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development announced this week. More than $651 million will benefit low-income families living on reservations or in other American Indian and Alaska Native communities. The funds will address needs like housing development, housing services, and crime prevention and safety. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's about 6 minutes after the hour, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon. I've been joined in the studio by the Alaska State Library Historical Collections Media Technician Extraordinaire, Damon Stubner. Damon, welcome.
Thanks, God. I like that title you gave me.
Yeah, nice to have you in here today. So you're going to be doing a sound and motion presentation tonight out at the university. Why don't you tell us a little bit about what you'll be showing?
Yeah, thanks, God. What I'm going to be showing is all films and videos from the Alaska State Library's historical collections. The first film that I'm going to be showing tonight is entitled Let's Learn Language, What's Your Name? It's actually the first episode of a series of about 10 episodes, kind of basically to help children learn a second language. Just so happens that this series that we have is in Tlingit.
And excellent.
Yeah, if you don't understand Tlingit, it's don't worry, it's designed for children.
Really. Yeah, it would be great for people to learn Tlingit language. There's a lot of them out now.
Yeah, and in fact, just thinking about what I was wanting to do, someone actually walked up to me and said, "Oh, we've been watching that."
Excellent. And how many years have you been doing this now?
I've been working for the sound and motion. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this for 6 years.
Wow, so it must be well received.
It is, yeah.
Some great old films, huh? All right, so what else do you got going on tonight?
We have some recently rediscovered Jay Hammond campaign ads when he was running for governor. These were actually brought to our attention last November, right around the election time, and someone actually walked in with this film can that actually didn't even say Jay Hammond campaign ads. It actually had Mickey Mouse on the cover. It was actually a film can for Walt Disney Home Movies, and this was all kind of tucked into a box of family films. Quite a surprise for everyone.
So is your job you just get to hang out and watch cool movies all day?
That's what I tell people. I also tell people they're not always that good. These are probably the best of what we have. So,
okay. How long does one of these shows last usually?
They're roughly about an hour and a half.
Okay. What are a couple other highlights from tonight?
I have a classic Alaskana film from 1941 entitled Eskimo Children. It kind of sets around a family and kind of looks at it from the child's point of view of the daily life living up on an island in the Bering Sea. The interesting thing about this film, it was produced by Encyclopedia Britannica when they were just starting to get into their educational films, kind of also riding the wave of newsreels at the time. But the film was actually shot and directed by a gentleman named Amos Berg. Amos Berg, in his later years, ended up living here in Juneau. He was actually quite a very popular and famous filmmaker and adventurer and traveled all around the world.
Well, it looks like a nice variety of films tonight.
Yeah.
This is sort of like the Jump Film Society, but historical version.
Yeah, it's more history geeks than...
Tell us about City of Gold from 1957.
City of Gold is a really interesting film. It's actually one of my favorite films that I'm showing tonight. It's actually written and narrated by Canadian author and journalist Pierre Burton. Pierre Burton grew up in Dawson City, and the documentary is a lot of remembrances that he of stories that he was told as a child from his father It's actually a really unique documentary told from that perspective. It's also a really unique film because it won a whole bunch of awards. It was nominated for an Academy Award for Best Documentary. It also won Best Short Film at the Cannes Film Festival in France, and actually Best Film at the Canadian Film Awards. And it really kind of changed documentary filmmaking after that.
And finally, A Pioneer Family in Alaska from 1979?
Yes. Yeah, it's a semi-biographical film about Yul Kilcher, the patriarch of the longtime homesteading family down in the Homer area. Interesting guy. The film talks about how he escaped Nazi-occupied Europe and how he came to Alaska to kind of set up a homestead and small farm in the Homer area. And interesting guy. It doesn't really mention in the documentary, but Yul went on to serve in the Constitutional Convention and then later as a state senator.
Okay. Now, Damon, tell us a little bit about their raw form and what you do. Are they in 16mm and you digitize them? Is this part of your job?
This is part of my job, yeah. What we get is oftentimes in a variety of different formats. Most of these films that we have are all in 16mm. A lot of times what I'll do is spend a fair amount of time cleaning the film, making repairs to them, bad splices, fixing the sprockets. And then we have a machine. It kind of looks like a 1950s, 16mm movie projector, but it's actually a lot more high tech than that. And you can plug it into your computer or another VCR or DVD player. And that's how we digitize them.
Okay. Interesting. Tonight, how does it work? You play a film, and then will you sort of, like you're doing now, give an introduction to the next?
Yeah, I'm just kind of, it's actually going to be more like a straight film festival. It's going to go from one film to another. I'll do a brief introduction of the films in the beginning and play the presentation, and then we can have a discussion about them afterwards.
Oh, excellent. So this is 7 o'clock tonight at the Egan Lecture Hall. Is that
yes.
right? And like all sound and motion events, it's free to the public?
Yes, it is.
Sounds like a lot of fun, probably 7 to 8:30, 9 o'clock, something like
yes.
that.
Yes, yeah.
Well, Damon, thanks for coming on the show today and telling us about that. Anything else you want to add?
No, I think we covered it, Scott.
Great. Thanks, Damon.
Thanks.
Go catch the river, it's running. Had to see line sails. Well, I've made it a mighty lot since. Bay of Plains. You and me, it's the story of the chrome hearts. Dreams and illusions, hard to tell apart. All coffee and gasoline, all the miles in between, sunrise and sunset, and all the small towns we ain't seen yet. Where the people seem to be getting by in spite of the rent. A little piece of history in the making, confusing what we were given and what we were taking. Turn it all upside down. You see the stars when we're looking at the ground. Shining all around. Hold on to my hand. Sing me a love song. Oh.
It's about 17 minutes past the hour, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon. In the studio now is Dennis Mimana. Did I get that right, Dennis?
You did.
And Steve Kosis of the Marie Drake Planetarium. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you, Scott.
Hello.
Nice to have you on the show. So, Steve, you're part of the whole Marie Drake Planetarium crew. Tell us how you came to know Dennis and how this idea of bringing Dennis up here to give these presentations came about.
Well, Dennis is a world-traveling astronomer. He's, I guess we call him a freelance astronomer. He does shows near his home in San Diego County, and then he does shows around the world. And I just saw his website, and I thought since he does workshops up north in Fairbanks that he could drop off in Juneau on the way, and that's why he's here.
Excellent. Well, welcome, Dennis.
Thank you.
Yes, so you came up today from San Diego.
I did.
Yes. From one sunshiny area to the next.
Oh, this is wonderful weather here.
And so you have been to Fairbanks before, but is this your first time to Juneau?
Oh, no, no. I've been to Juneau dozens of times.
Oh, okay.
Yes. I've never seen blue sky before, though.
Well, glad we could provide it today. So you're going to be giving two presentations. Are they at Marie Drake Planetarium?
Yes.
Okay. So tonight and tomorrow. Dennis, tell us a little bit about tonight's presentation.
Well, tonight I'm going to lay out some pretty big ideas for people. And the program is called The Seven Wonders of the Cosmos. And many, many years ago, I tried to come up with seven wonders of the cosmos. We have seven wonders of the technological world and seven wonders of the ancient world and so on. And I thought, I can do this. Well, I found out real easily that there's a reason that nobody's ever done it, because it's very difficult to do. But I put it together, and we'll see how it goes tonight.
All right. And what about tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, I'm actually going to be talking about the Northern Lights. I'm going to talk a little bit about why they occur, and something you're quite familiar with here in Juneau, why they occur, how they appear. Because a lot of people don't really understand how they actually work and how they appear. And also a little bit about how to take photographs of them that are really good photos.
Excellent. Steve, can you give us the nuts and bolts, the times on both of these presentations?
Both evenings, Friday and Saturday evening, will be at 7 p.m. at the Marie Drake Planetarium, which is on Glacier Avenue downtown between Harborview School and the high school. And it's right behind that artificial turf field, the glass doors.
And price of admission?
Well, it's free for students and those under 18, and others are $5 U.S.
Okay. Dennis, how did you become an astronomer? What inspired you?
Oh, I think it was probably back in the late 50s, you know, when we sent spacecraft up into space for the first time with humans on them. That was very, very exciting. And I was fortunate to have a father who supported it, even though he had no idea what I was doing out there in the yard all night long. He supported it. He took me places to learn about the sky. I had a couple of great teachers in school that really, really encouraged me to do this, and it was just something I've always wanted to do.
Okay. And can you give us one highlight, maybe one of the seven wonders or something that you'll be excited about talking about tonight?
I will be talking about the Northern Lights as part of one of the seven wonders. One of the wonders is our sun. And our sun is the origin of the Northern Lights when you trace it all the way back. So it certainly is one of the highlights of my career. This actually going up to Fairbanks next week will be my 23rd or 24th trip to the Arctic or subarctic to view and photograph the lights. So they're quite special to me.
Well, this sounds like a lot of fun. Again, that's tonight and tomorrow at 7 p.m., Steve?
Correct.
All right. What else would you guys like to add?
Well, I just would like to see everybody come out. I love Juneau. I love the people in Juneau. Every year I come back up here, and I spend a little bit of time. Of course, I've been up here in the summer months as well. And I just really love the town, and the people are just so nice. They've always welcomed me, so I want to thank them in advance.
All right. Well, you guys, thanks a lot. Have a lot of fun.
Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 20th of February, 2015. It was on this day in 1943 that Norman Rockwell published the first of four wartime prints called The Four Freedoms. He'd gotten the idea for the picture after he'd been to a recent town hall meeting in Vermont when one man stood up to explain his opposition to the town's plan to rebuild a school. And even though nobody at the meeting agreed with him, they all listened to him respectfully, and Rockwell realized that this was the meaning of freedom of speech. The Four Freedoms had been outlined by President Roosevelt in a speech to Congress, 1941, freedom of speech, freedom of worship, freedom from fear, and the freedom from want. Rockwell illustrated them, took his rough illustrations down to Philadelphia to the Saturday Evening Post. The editor, Ben Hibbs, told Rockwell to stop everything else and paint them as covers, and Rockwell did. They were some of the most popular pictures that Norman Rockwell ever made. It's the birthday of Robert Altman, the filmmaker, born Kansas City, 1925. He was a co-pilot on a B-24 bomber during World War II, came back to Kansas City, went to work for a film company that made industrial shorts, sold a movie to Hollywood in 1948, went into television. He was 45 years old when he made the movie MASH, which became his biggest hit. That was in 1970. Robert Altman, who, talking about his own career, said, "It's all just one film to me, just different chapters." It's the birthday of the playwright Russell Crouse, born Findlay, Ohio, 1893. He wrote the books for famous musicals, including The Sound of Music and Anything Goes. It's the birthday of Richard Matheson, Allendale, New Jersey, 1926. Wrote for television shows The Twilight Zone, Star Trek. Wrote horror and science fiction. Wrote The Shrinking Man, and I Am Legend. It's the birthday of the photographer Ansel Adams, born San Francisco, 1902. His parents gave him a Kodak Brownie camera when he was 14 years old, and they took him on a family trip to Yosemite. He was so taken with the mountains and the forest that he returned to the park every summer for the rest of his life, and his photographs of Yosemite and other wilderness areas would become familiar to millions of people, even people who had no idea who Ansel Adams was. Here's a poem for today by Sharon Bryan entitled Sweater Weather, A Love Song to Language. Never better mad as a hatter, right as rain, might and main, hanky-panky, hot-toddy, hoity-toity, cold shoulder, bowled over, rolled in clover, low blow, no soap, hope against hope, pay the piper, liar, liar, pants on fire, high and dry, shoe-fly pie, fiddle-faddle, fit as a fiddle, sultan of swat, muskrat ramble, fat and sassy, flim-flam, happy as a clam, cat's pajamas, bees, knees, peas in a pod, pleased as punch, pretty as a picture, nothing much, lift the latch, double dutch, helter-skelter, hurdy-gurdy, early bird, feathered friend, dumb cluck, buck up, shilly-shally, willy-nilly, roly-poly, holy-moly, loose lips, sink ship, spitting image, snip in the air, hale and hearty, part and parcel, upsy-daisy, lazy-days, maybe baby up to snuff, flibbity-gibbet, honky-tonk, spick and span, handyman, cool as a cucumber, blue moon, high as a kite, night and noon, love me or leave me, seventh heaven, up and about, over and out. Sweater Weather, A Love Song to Language by Sharon Bryan from Flying Blind, published by Saraband Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by Progressive Insurance, working to make progress for more than 75 years. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Supporting K2 today is one of the best and easiest things you can do with 2 minutes of your time. The money you donate will become stories and programs that will continue to keep you entertained and connected to Juneau, to Alaska, and the rest of the world. All in just 2 minutes. Let's keep the public in public media. Renew or start your membership today at ktoo.org.
It's about 28 minutes after the hour. You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Friday, February 20th, 2015. And joining me now in the studio is Andrew Krupe. He's a wildlife biologist with the Alaska Department of Fish and Game, and he'll be giving the Friday Fireside Lecture tonight at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center about Chilkoot River brown bears. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks so much for having me on. How are you?
Yeah, I'm great. Thanks for coming inside on this beautiful sunny afternoon. It's nice to have you. So you're a wildlife biologist, Andrew. Tell us a little bit, and more specifically, you study bears. Tell us what a day in the life is like for you.
Yeah, so I work for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game as a wildlife biologist. I'm the Southeast Regional Bear Biologist, and right now we have a project in Yakutat. I just got news this week that bears are still out in Yakutat and salmon are still in the streams, and we've been working there for the last 6 years trying to estimate the population size and looking at different habitat use patterns and radio collaring animals to look at survival and reproduction and mortality. But today we're going to talk more about the Chilkoot River up in Haines, Alaska.
Okay. And we were just talking before the interview, happens to be 46 degrees in Yakutat right now, and you say the bears are still out, right?
It's amazing. This weather now is nicer than it is in the fall when bears are on the streams fishing for salmon.
Okay. So tonight you're going to focus on the Chilkoot River brown bears. Tell us a little bit about them. What makes them special?
It's a really fascinating place. In the fall, as pink sand and sockeye salmon come to the rivers to spawn, bears congregate in large numbers, and along with that comes a lot of anglers and wildlife viewers. And so it's a place that has a big need for making improvements to how the facility is managed.
Okay. And so tonight you'll be giving two presentations, like the fireside lectures usually do, one at 6:30 and one at 8. What can folks expect?
Well, Alaska State Parks has been awarded a $1 million grant to be able to build wildlife viewing infrastructure and create things like bear crossings and improve parking. And what we'd like to do is be able to provide the facilities that people need to have safe experiences with bears.
So it sounds like tonight it's going to focus a lot on the intersection of people and bears and how to coexist.
It's a narrow one-mile corridor that brings in more than 80,000 people in the summer and about 10 different bears. It's really a nursery area for sows with cubs, and these bears are learning how to interact with people and how to fish for salmon. And so it's a really unique place to be able to view brown bears and lots of other wildlife. And as people interact with bears, it's best that we are able to teach them the right things.
Sure. Andrew, you've spent a lot of time studying bears, your master's projects and so forth, time in the field. What drew you to this field of study?
Oh, I've been in Alaska for about 20 years, and bears are one of our big megafauna species that get people so involved. And I was able to see how things were developing at the Chilkoot and saw that there was a need to make some change, and so started a master's project with some funding from Fish and Game and the Alaska Fish and Wildlife Foundation.
Okay. If you'd like to meet Andrew and see his presentation tonight at the Fireside Lecture Series at the Mendenhall Glacier Visitor Center, it's at 6:30 and 8, and it's free to the public, right?
It is, yes.
It is. Okay, Andrew, should be a lot of fun. Anything else you'd like to add?
For more information, you can look at the Fish and Game's website. There's lots of information about bears and anglers, as well as the Alaska Chilkoot Bear Foundation. We'll also have more information on the Chilkoot River and future management plans.
Andrew, thanks for your time.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Join Bartlett Regional Hospital Foundation for an evening to celebrate the talented artists who have contributed artwork to beautify our local health facilities. Enjoy artwork at Bartlett Regional Hospital's Blue Heron Gifts and Southeast Radiation Oncology Center. Meet the artists and enjoy appetizers and refreshments. Shuttle transportation between the two locations will be provided and art will be for sale to support our community hospital. This event takes place on Friday, February 27th from 6 to 8 p.m. For more information, go to brhfoundation.org.
It's about 20 minutes till the top of the hour. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, February 20th, 2015. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Now in the studio, Joy Lyon, the executive director of AEYC Alaska, or Juno, Joy? Oh, there you go, Southeast Alaska. Welcome to the studio. And also conference coordinator Katie Blagden. Nice to see you, Katie.
Hey, nice to see you too.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit about AEYC, Joy.
Well, AEYC is the Association for the Education of Young Children in Southeast Alaska. So we work with statewide partners like THRED and Best Beginnings, and we serve all of Southeast Alaska from Yakutat to Prince of Wales Island.
And it's a national, like there's a national version, right, as well.
Right. We're one of the, you know, every state has an affiliate, and so we're part of that national. Over 100,000 members nationally, and we have about 200 members here in Southeast Alaska.
And what's the age range that you focus on?
We really focus on birth to 8 because those are such critical brain development years, and they can use, you know, more focus and more support from our communities. And so that's what we're all about, is helping engage the whole community, really working with anyone that works with children to support them in their child's early learning, whether it's a parent or an early childhood educator or the community at large.
Okay, and you have a conference coming up, right? When is it,
Katie?
That's
right. Yeah, our conference is coming up 2 weeks from today on March 6th and 7th, and it's 2 full days. We have some really awesome people coming from all over Southeast, and our keynote is actually from Georgia. And so we have people coming from all over the place to speak on lyrics, language, and literacy, which is our theme this year. And so they're going to be talking about all different ways of communication, whether it be through math and science, art, different books, recipes. We have tons of different workshops that just cover a whole range of different literacy, language, and lyrics topics.
Excellent. Let's talk about that more in a minute and how to sign up for the conference. Joy, who would benefit from going to this conference?
Well, we would like to see everyone in the community that works with young children or has a young child, because it's really bringing the whole community together with K through 3 teachers, thanks to the school district are offering scholarships, and we have some other scholarships for them, and Head Start teachers, child care providers, parents, the early United Way reading tutors. You know, there's we've been really grateful to some of our sponsors that have some scholarships available by the Department of Education, Faulkner Banfield, the Alaska IBEW, LG Rayfield Mertz, and Best Beginnings and THRED. We are able to support people with the conference, and that's what's so exciting about the conference, is that you have people coming together from all over Southeast, all over the communities that maybe never interact with each other, and they don't see, you see the big, bigger picture of how everyone's working together all the way from birth through age, you know, third grade reading. So
Yeah, and it, you know, it seems from what we were talking about before the interview, it's a very exciting time in early childhood development and education. What's changing right now? What are you excited about?
Well, I'm really excited that we have this Juno Early Literacy Council that works with about 15 different organizations. So we meet every other month, and we really work together to figure out ways that we can increase parents reading with children, and also, you know, their strategies in reading, and then reading in the early childhood programs, and coordinating that with what the school district is doing so that there isn't a divide there, that there's a bridge between those two efforts. And we've really seen some strong results. So the Imagination Library, over 70% of children are enrolled to get a free book in the mail every month with their name on it.
Great program.
Yeah, and that's really, you know, and all these efforts of getting the word out about how important reading every day, you know, even from birth, right from the hospital, you know, children are learning. That's a nurturing time. That's the vocabulary that's used in talking with children while you read is much richer than just the ordinary language that parents might use, like stop, no, hurry, time to go. You know, when you read a book with children, there is that time to kind of like, oh, relax and have a close time together that's really nurturing. And they use words like, oh, it's a blustery day, or, you know, the books are just full of really enriched language and vocabulary that's what builds towards their later skills of reading.
Oh, that's an interesting observation. It's like a collaboration between the parent and the artist who wrote the book.
Right.
Exactly.
And even books without words, you know, the parents can add and talk and ask questions of the child, you know, as they get older. What do you think? Or what do you think is going to happen next? And, you know, reading the same book over and over is really important. So the Imagination Library, they have those books in the home, you know, from birth to age 5. And so they can read them hundreds of times, and children love to do that because then they're starting to identify the print on the page that belongs to the pictures, and they're really learning those skills.
And if you want to learn more about this, you can go to the conference, all of this. Katie, mm-hmm. Tell us more about that.
Well, our conference is going to be 2 days long, and it's going to be filled with workshops about how to actively read to kids, about different forms of language, about teaching language in schools, teaching language at home. There's tons of different themes and that are all surrounding lyrics, language, and literacy. So our keynote speaker, Jennifer Daniels, she's a songwriter and a really wonderful performer, and she is going to be teaching about movement and using movement and learning. And also about literacy and music and how fun is learning. And that is kind of really important, that kids can learn a lot through play and having a good time. And that's kind of the number one thing that we hope people can get out of the conference also, is that they can have a lot of fun in the workshops and have a good time learning and being prepared to teach children also.
Absolutely, and you said this already, Joy, but, you know, professionals for sure, but it sounds like just any parent of someone 8 or younger would benefit from this.
Yes, and it's a great time to just see what the different learning strategies, you know, reading strategies are. There's over 25 workshops to choose from, so there's something for everyone. There's something for infant-toddler teachers to K-3 teachers. Mm-hmm. So we've got university professors that are presenting from University of Fairbanks will be here, and our local university, UAS. And we've got Department of Education presenting, and some of the teachers from the school district. And so it's just going to be really rich and just a really exciting time. So
okay.
It's also an opportunity to get UAF credit if you want to, or CDA training credit, which is to become a provider or, yeah, a child care provider. You can get that.
Okay. And how does one register?
You can go to aeyc-conference.org, and you can register right there, or you can check out aeyc-sea.org. And I will also direct you, or you can call us at 789-1235.
Okay, Joy Lyon, Katie Blagden, thanks for coming on the show. Are we missing anything?
I don't think so. We just hope to see you there.
2 weeks from today.
Yeah. Woohoo. Thank you so much.
It's about 11 minutes until the top of the hour, and you're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Friday, February 20th, 2015. Scott Burton, your host, and joining me now in the studio is Bev Ingram of Rainforest Yoga. Welcome, Bev.
Thanks, Scott.
Nice to see you. And guest yoga instructor Sarah Joy Marsh. Welcome, Sarah Joy.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's nice to have you both on the show. It looks like you'll be doing some special classes this weekend. Bev, why don't we start with you? Tell us a little bit about when they'll be.
Yeah, we're offering a yoga workshop, and we're doing it at the Yoga Path, a new studio that's by the Alaska Brewery on Chain Road. And the classes will be on Friday night from 5:30 to 7:30, Saturday.
Tonight. Yeah,
right. From 10:30 to 1, and another session 3 to 5, and Sunday 9 to 12. And you can come to all or come to any one of the sessions. Each class will be a standalone class as well, and there's still space available.
And will they be for beginners or advanced?
All levels.
All levels. Yeah. Okay. So, Sarah Joy, it sounds like you've been here before. These folks must love you.
I love Juno as well. Yeah, this is my 13th year coming to Juno to teach.
And for the layperson, tell us a little bit about the kind of yoga that you teach.
Well, the style of yoga I'm teaching is vinyasa yoga, which means a flow style yoga incorporating Ayurveda, mindfulness, and neuroscience.
And can you tell us a little bit more about Ayurveda?
Yeah, so Ayurveda is considered the medicine of yoga. It's a bigger science than yoga and includes the practices of yoga. And its medicine is based on the seasonal rhythms, the personal life rhythms, and the daily rhythms that we see around us all the time. So those are incorporated into the yoga classes, and there are cute Sanskrit names for each of those things, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha. If anyone studied Ayurveda at all, they've probably looked up what is their personal constitution. And there are also seasonal constitutions and life stage constitutions. So when I teach a yoga class and it's in all levels, mixed age range, I suit the class to the most fundamental experience of Ayurveda, like the season that we're in right now, and the time of day that we'll have the class. Like for tonight, our class is more inward, because it's nighttime, and it's a time for the mind and the body to go more inward and prepare for contemplation or a good night's sleep. And then the morning classes are more active, because in the morning we can be more active, and just like the sun rises and the birds sing, we want the same thing for the spirit of the human being.
Very interesting. Sarah Joy, how long have you been practicing, and what drew you to yoga?
Yeah, I've been practicing yoga for 27 years now. And teaching for almost 24 years. And I was drawn to yoga when I was in graduate school studying art therapy and group dynamics. And I was introduced to mindfulness first, and then Vipassana meditation, and then I discovered yoga on a random solo backpacking trip in the White Mountains of New Hampshire.
Okay. How about you, Bev? What drew you into the yoga lifestyle?
Well, you know, actually I took my very first class when I was a teenager for teenagers that were having difficulties, and it was my first experience of feeling a little bit of connection to in a time when I was feeling pretty disconnected. It didn't stick then, but it kept me going back and going back, so I've been practicing for also a very long time and teaching since 2000. Yeah.
Okay. Sarah Joy, what would you say is the joy of yoga? If somebody is out there listening and they've never tried it, what would you say to them?
Well, it's a good question to ask, because this weekend actually focuses on the four most optimal qualities of the heart that we get from practicing yoga. And tonight's focus is appreciative joy, which means the capacity to have happiness for other people's happiness, as well as to enjoy our own sense of contentment or joy without conditions. And that's an unusual term for Westerners to consider, that we could be joyful without conditions. But the practices of yoga actually create a neurological, biochemical, and mental shift. So it isn't just that the body feels that much better, but your outlook and your inlook are also transformed. And you can touch that place of contentment and joy that's always available, according to the teachers of the ages, and seems elusively available to Westerners, but is also fundamentally here for us every moment. And yoga is what brings us back to that, and has brought me back to it for, like I said, 27 years.
So it's a little bit more than just stretching and mindful breathing, it sounds like.
It's actually a lot more than that. The other topics for the weekend include compassion, equanimity, and loving kindness. Those are all put together, those four qualities of heart are considered the result of practicing yoga and the magnetic homecoming of practicing yoga. So it's kind of like we put the practice on the mat and we cultivate those qualities, and then we live them in life at large, which is where the advanced yoga poses happen. And then when we're practicing those qualities, we also experience yoga coming through us much more effortlessly than people might imagine.
Interesting. Well, I wish we had more time to talk about this. Bev, can you give us the details again of the classes?
Yes. Yeah, so the workshop will be starting tonight at 5:30 to 7:30, and it's at the Yoga Path on Shane Drive, kind of across the street and down the way from the Alaska Brewery, close to Costco. Saturday morning, 10:30 to 1, and Saturday afternoon, 3 to 5, and Sunday morning, 9 to 12, and you're welcome. People are welcome to come to any one of the sessions or all of the sessions. You can sign up there.
And the cost?
And the cost is, per session, it's different. It's $35 for this afternoon's or tonight's session. The whole workshop's $165. So each session is different amount of time and different price.
Sure. If somebody wants more information, where can they get it?
They could go online to rainforestyoga.org, and all the information is on there. That would probably be the easiest place to go.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Bev Ingram and Sarah Joy Marsh, thank you so much for coming on the show today. Anything we're missing? Any last words of wisdom?
Well, I just wanted to mention, because I'm very excited, Sarah Joy has a new book that I happen to have copies of that I'll bring to the workshop. If people for a discount would like to get her new book. It's probably not enough time to talk about it all, but I'll just put it out there.
Let me name the title of the book because it might draw somebody to be interested. I wrote a book for Shambhala Press called Hunger, Hope, and Healing, a yoga approach to reclaiming your relationship to your body and food. So you asked me what I specialize in. As a yoga therapist, I specialize in women's recovery from food addiction and body image issues and internalized shame. So I help women liberate themselves from that unfortunate complex using yoga and mindfulness to do so.
So signed copies of that book.
Signed copies will be available. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, have fun. Thanks for coming in, you too.
Thank you so much.
Want to let you know about an event cancellation tomorrow, Saturday night's 40th anniversary dance celebration by Juno Dance Theater to be held at the Jack has been canceled. For questions or more information, call 463-5327. You can check out the documentary The Breach. That's tonight at the Rockwell Ballroom. When fishing guide filmmaker Mark Titus learns why wild salmon populations plummeted in his native Pacific Northwest, he embarks on a journey to discover where the fish have gone and what might bring them back. Along the way, Titus unravels a trail of human hubris, historical amnesia, and potential tragedy looming in Alaska, all conspiring to end the most sustainable wild food left on the planet. That's The Breach tonight at the Rockwell Ballroom at 7 p.m. As far as the weather, tonight mostly clear, patchy fog. Saturday, partly cloudy, patchy fog in the morning, highs around 41. Sunday, mostly cloudy, chance of rain, highs around 41. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.